Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we are in conversation with Tia Bhatia from Canada, an actress who has been open about her personal experience with adoption.
In this episode, Tia shares her journey from Ambala as a malnourished infant to that of Canada, where she lives a happy and fulfilling life.
Before we get into the interview, we want you guys to know a little something about our guest. Tia Bhatia is an actress from Toronto, Canada, and she studied at the Lee Strasberg Theatre and Film Institute in New York. Tia has garnered over 70,000 followers on YouTube through her family vlogs, where she shares her beautiful story of being adopted.
25 years ago, Tia was found as a baby in the city of Ambala in India with a purple tongue and ribs sticking out of her body. She was extremely malnourished and didn't even have any hips. After her parents adopted her, they discovered that she had a hole in her heart. Fast forward to today, Tia is a beautiful, healthy, and happy person living in a loving home. She's encouraged an open discourse around the topic of adoption in India, and she's even in the process of setting up her own orphanage.
Welcome to the show, Tia. First of all, we want to let you know that what you're doing by sharing the story of your adoption and encouraging an open conversation around this topic is very heartwarming. And the best part is that you get your parents involved and you openly discuss this topic in your vlogs and in most of your other videos on YouTube. And I'm sure a non-Desi wouldn't get why I'm saying this, but everyone knows that sometimes adoption is stigmatized in Desi homes. And Ankita and I have been so eagerly waiting for this interview so that we can be part of a conversation with you surrounding this touchy topic.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm actually very, very excited to talk about this. I've never had an interview that has gone into such depth about adoption, so I'm very excited to educate others on it.
Perfect. Yeah, I really want to start off by telling you a story.
Okay.
And this is about a girl who grew up in India as an only child in a very happy home with two amazing human beings for parents. And she grew into adolescence, she went off to university, and she was totally unaware of the fact that she was adopted.
Okay.
But soon she started dating a guy from her neighborhood. And let's just say that he was not the kindest person on the block. So after a fight they had, he told her that he would never marry her anyway because his family would never accept girls like her as a bride for him. And when she pressed further, although he knew that she really didn't know about her adoption story, he told her all about it, adding that every single person from their neighborhood also knew that she was adopted.
Oh, so,
wow. Obviously, she felt really isolated and she felt betrayed to an extent, but I guess she accepted at the end that maybe her parents didn't tell her anything because they thought they were shielding her from something. And the sad thing, Tia, is that she, till date, has not confronted her parents with this piece of information, and I guess they continue to believe that they succeeded in shielding her from pain.
Yeah.
So, it's just, you know, your mom had the sweetest way of telling you that you were adopted when you were just 6 years old, and she did it in such a way that you felt that you were a special child.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and she also did this without any external prompting except from you when you kept asking her where babies came from.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a lot of girls and boys in Desi homes, they end up finding out about their adoption from external sources. And in most cases, if they don't go and confront their parents immediately after that, their parents would also let it just slide under the rug. And this leads to all kinds of emotional trauma and an identity crisis. And you know, you clearly know a lot about this. So how do you think a comfortable conversation around the topic of adoption can be made into the norm in Desi homes?
Well, I definitely think a comfortable conversation can be made as the norm in Desi homes. It all honestly begins with communication. The most important thing to realize is that, you know, you're not just a relationship to each other. You're not just a mother, a daughter, a son, a father, or anything like that. You are best friends first. And best friends share everything with each other. For example, growing up, my relationship with my parents is what helped me understand how beautiful adoption is. When my parents told me about it at such a young age, I said that I was ready to adopt. It all begins on creating that relationship with each other. And it's the key thing is communication. This hiding it under the rug because they're worried about the other person, it does not turn out the best way. The best way is just to be open and honest with each other. So it starts from a young age to create that relationship with their kids.
Well, this is really interesting to me, Tia, because I grew up in Europe and I haven't seen many adoption cases around me, but I've seen a couple. And for us, it was seen as very normal and we never questioned it. And this is why I wanted to speak about it, because Ankita and I have had our conversations and she's just told me all these crazy stories. I'm like, wow, I've never seen anything like that before, because Ankita was raised in India. Now, I used to work as a sports coach in a summer camp back at home, and I mainly worked with kids between the ages of 8 to 12. And you know, this is an age where most kids are curious, and unfortunately, this curiosity can come across as bullying from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
So there were two brothers who walked in every morning to our summer camp, and one has very dark skin and the other one has very fair skin. So the child who had very dark skin, his name is Noah. And this would seem quite unusual to most kids, because they would see two siblings walk in and two siblings who look completely different. So obviously questions came about as, why does Noah look different? Why is he looking different to his brother? But the very first day this question came up, Noah just said it loud and clear. And he said, you know, I'm different because I'm adopted. And nobody questioned it right after that. It was a case of, you know, oh, thanks, nice to know. Thanks for feeding my curiosity. Let's get on with our lives. Nobody really cared. Noah wasn't treated any differently. Noah felt he never felt uncomfortable, and he just said it. But this is not the case everywhere. We know that some kids or family friends gave you a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm assuming maybe they were also Desi. But because you grew up in Canada, surrounded by many non-Desi people as well, is it safe to assume that you escaped most of the stigma?
You know what? Honestly, I escaped most of it compared to what it would be like in India, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I did come across all the bullying from other Desi kids within my middle school. They made fun of me and told me that my parents didn't love me and that's why I was given up. So it was a really, really hard and tough time that I went through at such a young age to be told that you're unwanted. So there definitely is stigma, but 100% it's much less than it is in India. In India, actually, my parents had family friends who said, why didn't you adopt a baby boy instead?
Mm.
My parents said, because we wanted to adopt a girl, and who are you to tell us who we should adopt and who we shouldn't adopt? They're very,
yeah,
you know, direct about it. And I'm aware of the stigma attached to adoption in India when, you know, back then the demand for a male was much higher because the son carries on the family name. That's what the thinking was. There was just too much cost to acquire a girl. You know, if you think about, you know, when she gets married, how much money you have to spend and all these other things, going that extra mile for a female, that's the thought process that they have. Of course, throughout time, it has changed slowly, but the process of change has been implemented. You know, you look at other celebrities that have adopted girls, be it Salman Khan in Bollywood or Sushmita Sen, who has adopted two girls. So it is definitely, definitely changing, but it's still there. It's still there and it's still very scary, especially now with all the, you know, the media outlets are putting out there all about the rape cases and situations like that are happening. Of course, that is going to, you know, conflict people's minds on should we adopt a girl or should we adopt a boy. So that's extremely, extremely scary. But definitely a girl can be as forward as a guy. And I truly believe that a girl is able to carry a household name, just like you two are taking for yourself.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to the stigma that is associated with adoption, you know, in our Desi culture, because we have a lot of listeners from the US, UK, Canada, etc., who probably have no idea why we're making such a big deal out of this. And it's pretty horrifying and disgusting what we're about to reveal now. But are you aware of the stigma as someone who grew up outside India? Do you know what people say back home?
Well, yeah, I definitely know that because I've heard it from others. I go back to India almost every other year. I've heard people say that, you know, it's just more expensive for a girl. I've heard people say right now with what's going on that a girl can be raped. It's easier for her to be raped, or that a girl, you have to pay dowry. So all these stigmas, I'm completely aware of. Of course, like, times are changing, but it's definitely there and it's definitely very harsh and hurtful sometimes.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, most of the things have to do with marriage and marriage prospects of a girl, especially. And, you know, people like to make a point of emphasizing that no one wants to marry an adopted kid, especially if it's a girl child. And some of the stupid reasons they give is that, what if this girl or boy is not as intelligent as the rest of our family, or worse, has loose morals, because most kids given up for adoption were probably conceived immorally. And I'm saying this with air quotes, because you know how obsessed like Indian aunties and uncles can get with morals and how a child was conceived.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's, and you know what? I've also heard of another reason why sometimes people won't adopt a girl is, you know, because they're just scared, of course, with or any adoption, scared about their health issues or what it might be from the past. And especially for a girl, what if she's, you know, came out of infidelity, rape, anything like that. So that's extremely, extremely, extremely scary to even think about.
That's the thing, like, so with so many children being abandoned in garbage bins and being delivered in bathrooms by teenagers and whatnot, I can't help but feel that if people just took a step back and stopped stigmatizing premarital sex and, by association, say, single motherhood and other things that are associated to premarital sex, I feel that if that stopped, then a lot of stigma associated with adoption would also fizzle down. Do you agree?
Yeah, completely. And you know what? Actually, I've heard one where a family friend of mine was telling me, they worked with adopted kids in India. She was telling me that somebody had asked that, you know, is there a way to find out who the child's mother is? Because they wanted to know, was she, you know, in really, really bad terms, bad word, a whore. That's exactly what they had.
Oh,
wow.
That threw me off. That really, really hurt me, because it doesn't matter what you come from. You know, you can't, you don't choose what you're born into. And no matter what, you should appreciate what you're born into. And yeah, it's just extremely hurtful. I mean, I've heard so many horrible things said to kids that are adopted, that you're not the same blood, that you're not this, you're not that. And it's hurtful for what a kid has to go through.
Well, Tia, let's just rewind a little bit and let's go back to the very beginning. And you have mentioned that you were found in Ambala and you spent some time in an orphanage there before you were moved to Delhi, where you were adopted. So, Tia, how young were you in Ambala?
I was an infant.
Okay.
There's a little secret to the story, which I didn't get time to share on my YouTube video, which I definitely would love to share right now.
Oh, wow. Exclusive once again. I'm so happy.
Well, when I was in Ambala, there was actually this German lady who was working for an orphanage that was there. And she had chosen two kids, only two kids, to transfer them to Delhi with her. And somehow I ended up being one of those kids. And that's how I ended up coming to Delhi, and I was put into an orphanage with 19 girls. But if it hadn't have been for this lady, I don't know what would have happened to me. And I'm actually going back to India in August to find out more information about who this lady is and where I came from.
Oh, all the best for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, we hope you find more answers. Because, Tia, I was just going to ask you if you have any memory of Ambala, but I guess you don't.
Not Ambala, actually. I'm very... one thing about me is my memory is extremely strong. And, of course, I was an infant then. But I do remember some things about the orphanage in Delhi, as in I do remember when my parents had adopted me and I was still there for a couple of more days. I remember the toys that they brought. I remember they brought me a parrot, and my dad was like, I think that, you know, you had some connection with a parrot in a previous lifetime because you wouldn't stop talking to it. So, you know, so I remember very, very little because I was extremely, extremely young.
I just want to ask you if you were born in 1990 or 91?
91.
So I saw that your birthday is October 15th.
Yeah.
I was born on the 16th.
Oh, we're...
Okay. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So when you were found in Ambala, we know that you were extremely malnourished and you had your ribs sticking out, your tongue was purple in color, you had no hips. And it took your parents close to 2 years to get you back to a normal weight and make your tongue look a normal color. But during that period, they also discovered that you had a hole in your heart, which fortunately they were able to treat for you. And I don't mean to say this in an insensitive way, but do you think that had you not been adopted, you probably would not be alive today?
I definitely think I wouldn't have survived. And that's just really sad to even think about because, you know, how would I have survived if no one gave me attention for a medical checkup? No one would have known what was wrong. Mm-hmm. And personally, in my opinion, like, you know, it's that's the toughest thing. You know, you should have a medical checkup for these kids.
It brings us back to the question of the condition of the orphanage that you were in and the other orphanages in our country, because if it took your parents 2 whole years to bring you back to a healthy weight, imagine if you didn't even have the hole in your heart. Do you think the orphanage would have been able to provide you with adequate care just for you to survive?
No, definitely not. Definitely.
It's heartbreaking, Tia, to think that.
Yeah, it definitely is.
No, because out of curiosity, you've been looking into helping the cause of orphans everywhere. And have you ever researched the condition of orphanages in India, much like the one that you were adopted from?
Well, I've actually been to some orphanages in India. And every time I've gone back, and I've even been to ashrams and all of that. And you know what? It's definitely changed. There's definitely more rules implemented. The conditions have slowly changed. But there's so many kids in there. So many kids. And medical checkup, it's costly. So they, of course, are not. They're going to try to avoid everything they can with medical checkups.
It does bring us back to like the stigma of unplanned pregnancies, because you know so many kids are actually getting abandoned, and the orphanages really don't have the necessary funds. And this is a problem that I feel needs to be addressed from a grassroots level. But which grassroots do you even start at? Like, where do you think you would want to start to address this if a child like you should be given a fighting chance to survive?
Personally, I just, you know, this is my opinion. I just feel like there needs to be a system in place where there are medical checkups for each child in an orphanage. It's not fair to the kids or the parents. You know, when a parent adopts a child, they're taking someone in as their family. And if their family member is sick, they would want to know about it and how to handle it. And you know what? The sad part is these people at the orphanages wouldn't even know why a child might need extra care or attention because of their condition. They have no idea.
Tia, we're trying to build an orphanage for 12 kids in Kenya. We set up the Alt Cricket Foundation last year, and for us to even just get an official registered charity, I had to search for lawyers to work pro bono, I had to send dozens of emails, and the process is just exhausting. But this was just to get an official registration to make sure we don't get into any sort of trouble with money. But now that is done, we have our orphanage to look out for and our kids. And there's so much behind the scenes thinking and diligence. For example, like, what if a child goes missing? What happens if a child becomes severely ill? Or what happens when they turn 18? You know, at the end of everything, whatever money we raise for our foundation goes into feeding our kids, or maybe just even a small Christmas celebration with a Victoria sponge cake. And we are far from, we can't even just imagine building a home for them right now, because there are so many things to take care of just to make sure that they're alive and they're living. And in India, there are orphanages with over 200 kids, and I understand that's the level you want to reach, as well as, you know, when you build all your homes. So how would you run such an institution and run the finances and technicalities? And most importantly, Tia, I mean, we do all of this to make sure the kids have a good life.
Well, you know what? It's definitely going to be such a long process. I you know, I watched the movie Lion. I'm not sure if you've seen it or not.
Yep.
But you saw the condition of that orphanage. You saw how many kids are packed up in it. So definitely there's a lot of legal things you have to go through, especially the fact that it's international. There's going to be, I definitely know it's not just a year process. It is going to be a couple of years. You're not just taking in one child. You're taking in so many. And every single child has different needs. And every single need needs to be catered to. So it is going to be a long legal battle, definitely, to acquire an orphanage that, you know, that I want to do at the range that I want to do. But I'm definitely ready for that process, and I cannot wait to begin it. But it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money and a really big team.
Yeah, exactly. The team is really important, because you think that, I mean, a lot of us have a lot of good intentions when we say these, like, you know, we want to help kids, we want to help orphans, but the amount of work that goes behind it, it's usually a lot of the times it's not really seen very clearly.
Yeah, it's not easy. You can't just say, you know, I wanna help somebody, because sadly there's so much you have to do in order to help those individuals.
Of course.
And creating a team is one of the biggest things, because you need people that you can rely on. You know, there's such a backward system, especially within India. So it's very scary to even think something like that. You know, children are put into human trafficking, et cetera, et cetera. And it can go wrong. People can be paid off, bribery. The country, you know, as developed as it's becoming, it's still very poor, and people will do anything for money.
Also, coming back to your orphanage, probably things have changed in the last 25 years, but You said that when your parents discovered that you had a hole in your heart, your mom called the orphanage to let them know of your condition, and they asked her if she wanted to exchange you with a healthy child. And I mean, it's like you were a commodity, like a car or just cattle.
Like I was a toy.
But at the same time, there's a part of me that kind of gets it. I don't know what the thought process behind that question was.
Isn't that scary that, you know, even I get it and you get it? It's so scary because we actually understand that process. They want to give these kids homes. And if they felt that I wouldn't have been able to survive or anything, that they would give them another child so that child can get the home.
And it was also interesting to note that your parents were told that there were 19 little girls available for adoption, and you were all sort of brought in and paraded so that they could pick and choose based on, I don't know, color, deformity, I don't know.
When my two aunts, my mom's sisters, came to the adoption agency to look at the kids, I couldn't stop saying bye to them. I kept saying bye and waving. And they said something about this little girl makes us want to take her home. So my Masi, my mom's sister, one of them has three girls. So she called her husband and said, I don't know if our sister, which my mom's name is Arvinder, if Arvinder would, you know, choose this child or another child, we don't know. But if she doesn't choose this child, are you okay to have a fourth girl at home? And her husband agreed. He said, I want that fourth girl. And then my other Masi, the other sister who was there too, she had two boys and she really wanted a girl. So she said, let me take her.
Everyone was fighting for Tia.
Exactly. And even thinking about it, I'm like, oh my God, I was extremely loved and blessed. Like, how crazy is it?
Even when you didn't have a home, Tia, even when no one had, you know, nothing was finalized, you still had so much love coming towards you.
Oh yeah. And you know, I was just such a blessing that my mom, you know, she came in with the thought process, the first child that I see is going to be mine. I don't care who it is. I don't want to go. She didn't want to go through picking kids. It's so wrong to do that.
Yeah.
And then you were the first child brought into the room and your aunts told your parents about you, and your mom had decided even before laying eyes on you that you were going to be her child, like you just said. But that doesn't, you know, take away from the fact that these little children were once paraded like commodities. And we understand that there's a surplus of children that need to be adopted. And very few people go down that route because you can't just treat kids like commodities. And how do you think you'd strike a balance if you were to start an orphanage? Because you're fighting two battles. You have to find a way to give these kids a home. But at the same time, you have your own morals and principles that you don't want to treat kids like that.
Yeah, that's the toughest thing. I think what matters most is to understand that you're not an organization first. To what matters most is you have to take it as this is a family first, no matter how many kids there are. And you wouldn't want to treat your family in the wrong way. And I feel like you take that as an organization second, take it as your work second, because most importantly, these kids just need love. Love is love is love is love. Love is the biggest thing out there. So that's the first thing that people should go in with that mindset when having an orphanage, not to create it as a company. Of course, you want to give them a home and, you know, you're going to work hard and you have to work for it like a job, an organization. But you have to understand that these kids come first before your own company.
And coming back to this whole commodities approach, the stars actually aligned perfectly for you, Tia, because it's not entirely uncommon to see a rich family decide to adopt a child, because why not? And you see celebrities doing it sometimes, and while no one comes out and openly says it, it almost looks like an impulse decision, like, let's get a puppy, so let's just adopt a child. So children really need to be protected from that too, while making sure that every child gets a home. You need to protect them from this kind of a mentality. Now, your parents almost adopted a baby boy and you got to see firsthand what the procedure involved was like. So have you ever compared notes in your head and wondered how different that procedure was from your own adoption process?
Oh yeah. You know what? Definitely. Because it must have been completely different how it was in India. I don't think there was a system to check up like crazy how it here is in Canada, because, you know, from my family's personal experience, it took a while for them once they had applied for adoption within Canada. And after the process, it took about over a year, because the fact that they were bringing the child into Canada, there were many social workers who came to the house. They did background checks. They checked the family life, income, relationships. So it definitely took a long time. And social workers want to make sure that a child is going into a safe and happy home. Now, as for adopting within India, I definitely don't think it would be as rigorous as a, of a process. Like you said, it's like getting a puppy or something like that. I definitely don't think the process would be as rigorous as it is here in Canada, because the most important thing for them is the child needs to be taken care of. While in India would definitely be that let's get this child a home. Let's give them a home ASAP as soon as possible.
Right.
And Tia, just again along the same lines, bringing a child home is a huge responsibility, and you just can't get away with ensuring that the child is just fed and clothed, because there's so much more to it. And ideally, you need to try to give it the best opportunities you can in life. And otherwise, you'd wonder if it did actually make a difference to a child's life if you hadn't done any of that. But how can you go about ensuring a child's future after being adopted? I mean, is there any sort of checklist that you can have?
No.
When you said that, I was like, what?
What? I did not expect you to say no.
My heart just sort of skipped a bit.
You know what? When a child gets adopted and goes into the home, let's say everything goes well, income-wise, family-wise, all the social workers have checked all the information. But actually, I've read many cases, because underneath my adoption video, a lot of other kids who have been adopted have actually written things. And it was very surprising to read. My answer would have been different had I not read their answers before. But right. Definitely, you know, social workers have come, checked up on the family, and everything turned out good. But then later on throughout life, I realized that the family environment was not a good environment. And actually, she had written under my video, and then she emailed me, and I had a wonderful long conversation with her. And she actually ran away from home because there was abuse involved.
Oh, no.
But she didn't run away until after 18, until she realized that she had those rights. And all of that. So that was really, really sad and heartbreaking. So you actually, you know what? It's so sad. All you can do as a social worker or an agency is, you know, go through the background checks, go through the rigorous process, and then just cross your fingers and hope that, you know what? They will treat this child right. Because anything can happen in life. Even if it's not a child that's adopted, even if it's a child that's given birth within the family, you know, anything can happen. They can come from a family which has abuse. They can come from a family, you know, so... It's scary. It's extremely scary, but that's why they try to do as rigorous as a process as they can.
Well, one of the processes involved is financial, right? Like they look at the family and see what their income is from the mother and the father, or potential mother and father. Now, we know that Canada has, when you are adopting kids within the government sort of sector, public adoption in comparison to adopting from private agencies is a big disparity. So it seems like there's a big role that money plays in adoption, and it kind of comes across as if only wealthy people can afford to adopt a child. So do you think that it really is the case?
No, because you know what? Actually, I do come from a really good family background, but we weren't that wealthy when my parents had adopted me. They had just moved out from an area that was not really well taken care of an area. They lived in a basement before. And finally, my father was able to afford a home, and my mom was a housewife. And at that time, he was just building up. He was manager, and he was just building up to presidency and all of that. But he wasn't considered rich at all. And honestly, the cost depends on a number of variables, you know, the type of adoption you undertake, whether you work with an agency or the province you reside in, and any travel costs if it's international. So most importantly are the travel costs, especially if it's international. But within Canada, it's, of course, very little to adopt a child through the public welfare system.
Speaking of your father and your family, at least now it's a very comfortable home and a really comfortable family life that you guys have. And a lot of people listening to this right now, or a lot of people who follow you, probably already know all about your dad. But for those who don't know him, do you want to explain who your dad is?
So if you're familiar with the NBA, which is the National Basketball Association, they have a team within Toronto called the Toronto Raptors. And so my father is actually the South Asian ambassador of the Raptors. But not only that, in 1998, he started doing Bollywood concerts within Canada. So he brought his first concert, had Salman Khan. So he started bringing all these actors to come to Canada and put on wonderful shows. So he began to be known for that. Then in 1999, he was given the recognition of Superfan for the Raptors. And eventually, just recently, he was given the Toronto Raptors South Asian Ambassador. But also aside from that, he has two Hyundai dealerships. And one of the dealerships, he actually started off as a cleaner within that dealership.
Wow.
You know, despite all of this, everything that you have in life, you actually are still making a name for yourself, just for yourself. And you're pursuing your own acting career and you're doing so much with your life. So is this something you learn by example? Like how far did your parents push you towards achieving all of these things?
Oh yeah, my parents have always been very supportive. Of course, at a young age when I told them that I wanted to be an actor, they said, you know, think about some other things as well. They thought I was just, you know, it's just that thing that a kid chooses. I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a doctor. But eventually at 16, as I kept forcing them and telling them that, no, this is what I want to do, I had all the support behind me because my parents truly believe that, you know, you have to work hard to achieve anything in life. And you, as long as you have a passion for something, follow it. So they were definitely very, very supportive about it. And my father, he's a leading example of exactly of what he does. And even my mother, you know, her passion is to take care of me. That's what her goal is. She's a housewife. And she could have gotten a job or anything, but she chose to take care of me because her passion is me. So definitely put everything that you have within that passion and keep moving forward.
Well, Tia, you're very well on your way to becoming a very well-renowned actress, and you've expressed your dreams of meeting Deepika Padukone or even acting in Bollywood. And obviously, once you make it there, which I'm very sure you will, there's no doubt about that, you'll have a lot more influence and a lot more power. And how will you use this to influence to further your cause for orphans and orphanages in India?
Well, my goal is definitely to make my name within Hollywood, and definitely if Bollywood, you know, opens their arms to me, I would definitely go into that. But, you know, we look at individuals like Sushmita Sen, who adopted two girls, or, you know, even Deepika Padukone, who openly talked about depression. These actors have become leading examples. Like, you know, it was very, very surprising because when my mom came here to Canada and she told me that she started realizing that there were such things as mental illness and stuff like that, she said no one really talked about it back home. And now, as times has changed, you have such a big actress like Deepika who came out and about and said, I have depression. Then many people agreed that they have it too. And then even with Deepa Mehta, who was, you know, such a wonderful director, when she made the movie Fire, you had many women come out from LGBTQ communities or males and all of that. Everybody came out to support each other. And you realize there are so many different types of people and what somebody with influence can bring about. They can bring about change. So I definitely want to bring about change. I want to erase that stigma. My goal is definitely to erase that stigma of adoption. And I would use my voice. I would use my platform. You see what Angelina Jolie has done in Hollywood. I would do that within India.
Oh, that's amazing to hear.
Thank you.
So just to go back, we feel that there are a lot of orphans in this world, and on one hand, and on the other hand, there are scores of childless couples just yearning for a baby. And logically, it makes no sense why all these couples are not adopting all of these children and living together as happy families. But realistically, a lot of things factor into why couples avoid adoption. So what do you think is the main reason behind this?
I think your medical history. I definitely think it has to do with, you don't know if what's in their genes, you don't know, you know, if they can, if all of a sudden there's cancer or, you know, I do see that a lot of people go towards, if they can't have kids, they go towards surrogacy. You know, I do believe that any child is, you know, a loving child and they definitely deserve all the love and happiness in their world. But I really do hope and pray that people just open their minds more to adoption, because there's so many kids out there who don't have homes. And sadly, I do understand why they don't want to adopt, because I've had a couple of people in my videos say that they want to adopt, but their family members are so closed-minded that they don't want them to.
Oh, that's a very common story.
Yes, exactly, Tia. That's what we were just going to speak about, because people consider all kinds of options before adoption. And, you know, some even go through painful medical procedures and even look to surrogacy. And it kind of makes it obvious that people like to procreate, perhaps for the selfish reason, as you just mentioned, of passing on the genes, on continuing their bloodline. I've never really understood this, to be honest, from a personal point.
You know what? Every family has drama within them, right? So you can come from the same blood, but every family can, you know, you have family members who don't talk to each other and they're the same blood. You found those who want no relationship with each other. So personally, I don't believe, I've never been taught that family comes from blood. I've always been taught family comes from loyalty. So even with my friends, my girlfriends are not just my friends, they're my sisters, because to me, they're my family. So I really think that that stigma of, you know, that it has to be blood, you carry on the blood. Most of the time, even your own blood turns their back on you, you know? It's all about loyalty. It doesn't matter if you're blood or not. It's all about loyalty.
You know, this actually kind of brings us to an interesting observation from before your parents had you, because their friends and family also presented all these options to them before they resolutely stuck to adoption. And one interesting bit that stood out to me was that a family member of yours offered to have a child and give it up for your parents. And I simply cannot wrap my head around that concept. Like, how would such an arrangement work?
You know, it was actually my mom's sister, and she said that that she would be willing to, you know, get pregnant, you know, and not keep the child for herself. She would give it to my mom and dad. And her and her husband even had agreed that, you know, they will create a baby for, you know, for my family. But my dad was completely against that. He said it gets very messy and sticky within family and the situations. And he said, there's so many kids out there, so many kids out there who need a home. Why are we going to go build a new home for a newborn when we can build a new home for kids that kind of need it?
Another thing is that I understand that they said it from a place of love, but from their standpoint, it would be really difficult, wouldn't it, seeing your own child being brought up by someone else, no matter how close you are to the entire family, how much you're in the picture, just to see your own child being brought up by someone else is not that easy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be easy. And also in the back of the mind, you know, it could be that this is my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just gets very messy. And my father and mother agreed they don't want to go along those lines at all. And they definitely wanted to go along the lines of helping another child.
Well, I'm sure somewhere in the world, someone must have figured it out. And it must be working out maybe splendidly in some cases. But there are many issues with this problem. It's family. People might get lazy in ensuring the legal side of things because they'd assume that everyone would just get along forever and just happy-go-lucky with everything.
Or they would feel that they could better take care of the child than the family that they gave the child to.
And also, because it's family, it's hard to predict when there might be a falling out, as you had just mentioned. But do you agree that throwing a child into the equation might actually make things way more complicated between family than it has to be?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I 100% agree to that. Because, you know, a mother is a mother. You know, you had that child in your stomach for about 9 months. You carried that child. You took care of that child for 9 months. It came from you. So it definitely would get messy because an individual can feel that they have more of an ownership over the child than any.
And you were really, really lucky to be brought into a very happy home, into a very happy family where everyone was kind to you. Like you said from the beginning, how your Marcies had already laid their eyes on you and decided that they were going to bring you into the home. But unfortunately, it's when you hung out with kids from certain family friends' homes that, and you openly talked about being adopted, that you started getting discriminated against and to an extent, you know, bullied. And kids, like you said in one of your videos, they can be really mean. And these kids told you horrible things that your birth parents didn't want you. And I just feel that this is a huge reminder that the discourse around adoption should never be restricted to just homes with adopted children. Every single family needs to educate its kids about the concept. So what do you think is the best way to make little children more aware and as a result, more kind in this respect?
Well, look at the way I said in my video how my mom explained to me that I was adopted. You know, and I feel like that needs to be done in every household because people will pick on each other. I think not just with adoption, but with anything, like everybody is completely different. Again, I'm going towards like LGBTQ rights or anything like that. You know, every kid should just be educated on the different type of people out there in this world, because the moment that they start picking on another child, you don't know the damage it can do to the other child. Like for me, it created an identity crisis. Of course, I ignored it and I suppressed it. But by 16, it was throwing me off. I was crying and I felt like I wasn't smart like my parents. I wasn't this. I wasn't that. It's because I'm not their blood, because that's exactly what the kids were saying to me. So, but when my parents told me at a younger age I was adopted, how did I feel? I felt extremely special. So that's the most important thing, is that I feel like within households, I know that when I have kids, how I'm going to bring them up, what I'm going to teach them. I'm going to teach them about the different types of people out there in life. And that, I think, that needs to be discussed in every single household. Because if your own child is bullied, you would be upset. So why would you allow your child to bully another child?
Yeah, and the thing you said earlier about people asking your parents why they decided to adopt a girl child. In fact, my dad, Tia, was not in town when I was born. He was away for work. So when he heard that I was born, he threw a party for all the people there in the area. And someone actually asked him why he was celebrating the birth of a girl child. And, you know, it traditionally, I think it kind of stems from the concern that daughters cost money, as they parents have to pay dowry and parents have this big expensive wedding, like you said. But sons bring in more money through marriage. And if it's an adopted daughter, somehow they think it's okay to ask for more. And that's beyond disgusting. And it's actually a social evil where sometimes people think that, oh, okay, you have an adopted daughter, we will get our son married to her. How about you pay us more money in dowry? And now you dressed up as a bride in your mom's bridal attire on Mother's Day. And it was so sweet to see your parents, you know, cry for joy. But when it comes down to it, I'm sure you'd want to protect them from this kind of nonsense. And they'd like to protect you too. So do you have an action plan in mind? What will you do if someone brings something like this up?
Me and my family, my whole mom's side and my dad's side, we're all the same when it comes to this. If anyone brought up anything about adoption or about my parents or anything, we would be very blunt. We're very nice people, but we're also very...
You're Punjabi, Tia. Punjabi people are lovely.
Yeah, we're very nice people, but we're extremely blunt. Like, if you know, one time, actually, we were at a prayer, and there were all these aunties standing around, and they were talking about this other little kid and how, like, a family member had passed away and how he wouldn't get the wealth because he's adopted. And I overheard that at a prayer. Now, I was only about 18, 19, and my mom was there too, and she was just staring completely in shock on how can these women speak like this. So I actually said, "Mom, watch this." And I guess I'm just very savage when it comes to this. I went into that group and I said, "Really, why wouldn't he be getting the money?" And they said, "Oh, because he's adopted, you know." And then they're like, "You know, Tia, you come from a really good family. Your family is wealthy. You will have that income passed down to you." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, for sure. But I'm adopted too. So, I mean, you have a say in my life?" And they just looked at me stunned because they had no idea I was adopted. And that was the first time I actually became vocal about adoption, because I realized what was going on. My family and I, we would be very straight up to others. "So what if I'm adopted? What does that change?" It doesn't change the fact that I'm their child. It doesn't change the fact that they're my parents. Who are you? You are nobody to us. So why is it going to affect us?
I wish I was there to witness that, actually. That sounds amazing.
Oh, yeah. My mom, actually, you know, my mom, she's a very simple individual. She tried to grab me and said that, "Please don't say anything." And I said, "No, Mom, I'm going to say something." And then she started laughing after she realized what I had said. And she herself started becoming more open about adoption. When actually I put my video out, she was very nervous. She was scared about what people would say. That whole thing about "log kya kahenge."
Yeah.
I told my mom that, you know what, it doesn't matter what people say. She goes, "No, I've never cared about what people say. I just don't want you to be hurt." And I'm like, "Mom, trust me, I will not be hurt. Anyone can say anything to me and I will laugh." And I'm like, "Do you see the family I'm in?"
After all these years of dealing with your doubts and coming to terms with the negativity you face in the past here, have you finally found some closure to everything?
Oh, yeah, I definitely have found closure. And I kind of, you know, my whole thing about showing people about my adoption is what I'm going to be recording when I'm in India in August, is that I want people to understand that I'm not trying to look for these birth parents of mine, because I'm very happy in the family that I'm in. I'm very blessed that they gave birth to me. I actually asked my dad, I go, "What if I found those parents? What would you say to them?" My dad said, "I would give them the world for giving me you."
Wow.
And you know what? It's not to provide closure for me that I'm doing this research on my background. It's because I want to educate others. I don't want to walk into, and you know what? Actually, my parents and I have discussed everything because we have such an open relationship. We've discussed everything that I could be, you know, a child out of such negative situations or positive situations. So I'm ready for anything. And I would never want to go interfere into those birth parents' lives that, hey, I'm the daughter that you gave birth to, et cetera, et cetera. I would never do that to anybody because there's a reason probably they had to give me up. So I wouldn't do that. My closure came from just knowing from the fact that I have a good life. I am healthy. I am pursuing my dreams and I'm going to educate others on adoption. And that's what provided me closure. I didn't need anyone else to tell me why I was given up.
So this is something we touched upon earlier, Tia. Your parents had come very close to adopting a little boy when you were 5 years old. And you were totally on board until you realized that you'd have to share your parents with him. So you started refusing vehemently. That was very cute. But then later, when you said that you were going through a dark phase with an identity crisis, you felt like you didn't want another child to go through the dark thoughts and doubts that you were going through. So again, you felt like not bringing a sibling home was the best idea. But now you say that you kind of regret it. So I want to ask you if this is a personal regret that stems from the fact that you couldn't experience having a sibling, or is it because you feel like another child was so close to getting the happy life that you have and you were the one who stood in the way of that?
Well, actually, I'd just like to clarify one thing. I knew by the age of 9, 10 that I did want a sibling. But the issue was the fact that, let's just start with this. It was definitely definitely a personal regret that I couldn't have the experience of a sibling. When my parents told me that they were going to get another child, I was extremely happy, of course. And then, like you said, when the social worker told me that I would have to share my parents, it threw me off. And of course it would. You know, you look at, it's a 50-50 split for children. Some children are just not ready to share their parents. I've seen videos where other kids freak out that they're having another child.
But the only thing I didn't want to share when I was a child was my ice cream tier. I never took it that far.
I didn't want to share my parents. Oh my goodness. I was so scared. I was so scared that they brought me into this house. And what if they don't, what if they start loving the other child more? And that was pretty, you know, it, as now when I look back at it, you know, you think, okay, that was selfish. But then you realize your age. Like, I was six. Of course, every child is not selfish.
No, just yesterday, my husband was telling me I'm the most selfish person because I made him walk back home instead of getting a cab because I wanted to walk. So yeah, I'm 25, Tia, and you were 5 when you made that statement.
I know, exactly. Okay, that's actually really funny. Fine, I'm selfish, guys. No, well, I freaked out, you know, I freaked out. What if they forget about me because I'm getting older? But regardless, my parents were still going to adopt no matter how I felt. Exactly like, you know, when a kid, be it a biological kid, when they're told they're having another child in the family, the parents are not going to stop their pregnancy because the kid doesn't want a child, you know. Yeah. So, you know, I've seen videos where children begin to cry, or they cry because they wanted a brother and not a sister, or a sister and not a brother. So, you know, then there's some who just get really happy. So regardless, my parents were going to adopt another child. But I'm glad that they didn't, because my mom's health started deteriorating. It wouldn't have been fair to the child if they had continued with the adoption. My mother couldn't pick me up after a specific age anymore. She couldn't go on field trips with me. My father was always working, and my mom would have these really severe arthritis attacks. And it was just a very, very scary thing. And had they brought in a new child, I think it wouldn't have been fair to the child itself. So, of course, I regret not having a sibling, but somehow, you know, it just came out for the better, because with one child, they were able to take care of me.
Well, Tia, you have said before that you adopt a child yourself, and maybe, I don't know, maybe you feel that might just set the scale right, and you don't believe in timelines, so you don't like to say that you'll be married in this many years or that you'll have a child in so many years. But do you feel that in your life you want to be married to adopt a child? Does this matter to you?
No, not at all. No, I never thought that. You know, I used to say, even a couple of years back, I would say that, let's say that I am stable by whatever age. I don't care what age that is, an age that I can stand up on my 2 feet. Hell, if I could even stand up on my own 2 feet at 21, 22, and I was able to adopt a child, I would do it. It doesn't matter to me. I don't believe that you need to be married, you know? When you look at Angelina Jolie, she was married when they first decided to adopt their first child, but 3 months later, her and her husband split, and she still continued with the adoption process as a single mother. And now look at what she's done. You know, it didn't stop her. So I believe that you would adopt when you are ready to adopt. And giving a child a life that they might have not had is the best thing ever. And being a mother or a father is a blessing. And I promise to adopt once I'm stable. And I am not going to adopt just one. I will adopt a whole cricket team if I have.
I'll train them in cricket, Tia. It's okay. It's okay. Well, Tia, we've all seen on your family vlogs and your YouTube videos, you know, that you are very close to your dad and you guys are pretty much inseparable. So do you feel that a father figure is important from the very beginning if you adopt a child? Do you think that's something that might affect the upbringing?
You know what? I'm very lucky and blessed I have a father and a mother, but I don't believe that. I actually had a friend of mine who came from a single mother, and her father actually, the moment she was adopted, he left. But that mother has stood there by her child. She has acted as a father and a mother. And that's amazing. Kudos to her. Kudos to all the single parents out there who've been able to, you know, take on the other role when they had no other choice. And I believe that what just matters is how you take care of those kids. You don't need to have a straight, complete father and a mother. Because look at all these wonderful single parents who have brought up such amazing kids and turned out to be such amazing individuals. What matters is your upbringing. What matters is the love that you give somebody. Just because somebody's not the opposite sex doesn't mean that, you know, that you need a father or a mother. You just need a parent.
You just need good human beings surrounding the child.
Good human beings around you. That's all you need. And that's how I think of it. You know, be it if I'm married or not, be it if I'm in a relationship or not, I will have these kids and I will take care of these kids like how a father would take care of them and a mother.
So your parents had to wait for about 8 years before they finally got to bring you home and be your parents. And more often than not, you learn the value of something either when you lose that thing or when you have to wait a really long time to get it. So unlike my parents who had me the minute they decided to have a child, things were not exactly easy peasy lemon squeezy for your parents, right? And this is mostly the case for most families that try to adopt or go through the whole long drawn process of adoption. So do you think that because of this, adopted kids maybe have it a lot easier than the other kids?
No, I definitely, I personally don't think, you know, they have it easier because like I said before, it just depends on the household. We cannot put like, you know, a guessing game on the type of household they're being brought into, or even if it's biological kids, the type of household they're being born into. So it's just scary. It's what life is. Life is a roller coaster with ups and downs, and you never know what's going to come your way.
Yeah, it's not to say that adopted kids are spoiled in any way or anything. Like, really, you can't have control over these things. But maybe, at least in your case, you didn't have many traumatizing, chappet marofying, chappal throwing experiences that other kids like us had.
This whole family was just so insanely loving and accepting. Oh. My mom's side of the family, I was spoiled. I was a spoiled little brat.
You know, Tia, my mom claims that her chappal throwing was her way of expressing love. I find it very hard to believe, but
my mom used to throw the chappal as well, but I can't imagine your mom doing that.
Yeah, no. She's very scary when she gets upset, though, so don't tell her I told you that. But no, she's never done anything like that. My father truly believes that he even though he's a complete, you know, he's a Sikh man out of those Sikh roots, and you know, they're really, they have a stance with their kids. My father actually believed to never lay a hand on their child, be it a son or a daughter. Mm. He believed not to throw your chappals at the kid. He believed that how to like take care of these kids and how to bring them up is your upbringing. You create that best friend relationship, but you also create those boundaries that I am still your father. You have to understand what I am saying is to look out for you. And I am still the person who has the utmost, authority. Mm-hmm. So we truly believe it definitely comes from that, aside from chappal throwing.
Well, Tia, we know that you don't want to disrupt anyone's life and you still like to know more about your roots. And if you ever got the opportunity to meet a birth parent? I know this is a very difficult question that you might find difficult to answer, but do you have a scene rehearsed out in your head about what you'd do or what you'd say?
You know what? I don't think I've actually gotten to that place yet because you don't know what condition I was born from, right? So it all depends on that. And to be honest, I'm just going to go off the record and put a complete, I'm just going to be very blunt. It could be out of rape, infidelity, all the negative things. And like I had said, or even positive things, I could have come out from anything. I could have even just been a child that got lost. You know, there's so many variables, so many factors. I don't know what would happen in the moment. I genuinely don't know. I would love to know if I have a sibling, to be very honest. That would be amazing. I told my dad one time, I said, you know, what if we find out that I have a sister or a brother? And I'm like, oh, wait, dad, what if they're a twin? What would you do? But I was like, yeah, I would adopt that child too.
Your dad, you know, speaking of your dad, he's so full of positive advice all the time. Whenever we watch his videos on your channel or your vlogs, as outsiders, I feel, for me and Meenal, it's very easy for us to listen to his advice and take it very seriously. But when you're his own child, is it possible that you think of it as background noise? And how practical do you think all of his advice is, and how seriously do you take it?
I take it completely seriously. I live my life with his advice. He's always been right. He's always, always been right. He knows so much more. His struggles and my mom's struggles, I've seen it. I've seen the struggle that my mom had when, you know, my grandmother was a very strict grandmother, in-law for her. So I've seen the struggles that she had, you know, handling that, and how she never spoke up or said anything negative to, you know, the condition that she was in, or, you know, the strictness that was put upon her. Like every, you know, sauce that they say, an in-law kind of provides that authority figure that do this, do that. My mom has, she's been so inspiring. My father's words throughout all his struggles in life, he's told me no matter what is to just keep moving forward. And that you need to always be kind to each other. And one thing that my dad always says, no matter how big or small you are in life, you are going to treat others the way you want to be treated, and you are going to constantly give back. He always tells me, don't forget where you come from. And he's like, I don't forget where I come from. I'm not going to let you forget where you come from. That's why they're very 100% okay about me speaking about my adoption, because they want, it's like a reminder to myself that maybe I couldn't have had a lifestyle that I have right now. So now it's my turn with the turn of events to give back to other kids out there.
Well, dear, almost just at our last question now, and we just want to end this interview by just asking, finally, what advice would you give to a teenager who, like yourself, all those years ago, is struggling with an identity crisis related specifically to adoption?
Well, the one most important thing is that they have to realize that they were adopted for a reason, that these parents wanted them. That's the biggest thing to realize. Mm-hmm. You were not just thrown into the family. These parents wanted you. They went out of their way. They went through the process to have you. So create that connection with them. Open up. Communicate with them. Talk to them about what you're feeling. Tell them that you're hurting. Tell them that you feel disconnected. That's what you have to do.
That's really sweet, Tia. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've helped bring a very, very important discussion to the table.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad that our podcast could address this with someone like you who's had firsthand experience with adoption.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you. Thank you to both of you for having me. This has to be, definitely goes down into my record history of one of the best interviews I've ever had, because people usually start questioning about, you know, they focus just on the acting or they focus on other things and they'll bring in the adoption here and there. But to go this in depth to educate others, and I've actually never had a conversation this open with anyone else aside from my parents.
Wow.
Oh, we're really happy you enjoyed it as well.
This is a total mic drop moment for us right now.
No, we were initially quite worried that would these be too much for you.
But oh, no.
We're glad that you enjoyed yourself.
No, you guys have become like family, that I've been able to share this much with you.
Oh, thank you. So if our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on all my social medias. On my YouTube channel, it's Tia Bhatia, so T-I-A, and last name is Bhatia, B-H-A-T-I-A. On Instagram or Twitter, it's Tia_Bhatia. And if you can find me that way, you can just type my father's name now, Bhatia, and you will somehow find me.
Well, we're always looking for beautiful stories like yours to share, Tia, and it's been a great and absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you once again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Tia. It's so important to come out in the open and talk about adoption. Despite the stigma that society likes to attach to it, Tia is a brave and wonderful young woman who genuinely cares for the cause of orphans everywhere. So please feel free to reach out to her if you have anything to ask her or if you feel a little bit lost.
You can follow her on Instagram and Twitter at Tia_Bhatia and follow her own YouTube channel as well. While you're on social media, do check us out at Desi Outsiders, and if you have any thoughts or feedback or questions on this episode, drop us a mail to mail@dcoutsiders.com. Please tell a friend about our podcast. Please, please, please. And if possible, leave us a review. It would really help us out.
So we'll see you next week with another fun conversation. Until then, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.